All right, and then item 12, reports. I miss miscellaneous already, but reports. I didn't notice this when I read the draft agenda. The order's changed. So we're going to take trustee reports on meetings, seminars, and conferences first. So item A, any trustee reports?
I just got back last night from the Pension Bridge Conference in Austin, and it was focused on real assets. I'll just be brief. Good session. So comments that I heard during the conference, the areas that people are most excited about for real assets are data centers, transportation, power, especially with the demand for data centers, which they expect the demand will triple by 2050. But other aspects of power, natural gas, solar, nuclear, and apparently there's more and more available financing for nuclear as it becomes more and more of a thing. Number four was housing, especially senior housing, and then five, logistics regarding supply chain issues. What's favorable for real assets is that rates are moving lower, so that should help spark more life. And then risk, the concerns for inflation with respect to tariffs if they happen, and geopolitics. Office seems to be getting a little bit more oxygen delivered to it, but those office properties that are benefiting are the newer properties that have more amenities and so forth. The older ones are still struggling terribly. There was an interesting comment about data centers. There was one person on one of the panels who expressed concern because there's a lot of money pushing or flooding into data centers and so forth, a lot of enthusiasm. But compared to other aspects of infrastructure, data centers are very capital intensive to start up, but they're also incredibly expensive to maintain. So as the technology changes and you have to buy brand new chips, like at least every 10 years or so, it's just the cost of running those. It's not like the boring infrastructure investments where you just put in the initial capital and low maintenance and then you get a predictable return. So those were some highlights of the conference, and it was a good experience.
Did they discuss at all
the conversion of core office to data centers in terms of, as opposed to new construction, taking what has been historic core office and converting it as part of the strategy on data centers?
That's a very intriguing idea, but I did not hear that being discussed. But the only conversion that I really heard of with respect to office is, can we turn them into apartments?
Right.
And that's not very realistic because they're just not set up for that.
Yeah, they aren't. So, but yeah, for data centers, it's a different. With that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea was core real estate, core office, because of the conversion difficulty in so many of the buildings, they just don't. They can't. The cost to convert and redo it is crazy.
I think the limiting factor is how do you get the power.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think that's the main limitation is the power supply. And if they can figure that out and convert an office building to a data center, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, climate change has brought back nuke. Look at that. So nuclear is back in play. All right. Interesting. Thank you. Any other trustee reports on meetings, seminars, and conferences? Not seeing any, so thank you. Item B, staff reports. Christina.
So I'm going to switch this one up too, and Tim has some items to report, and then I'll report.
Sure. Okay. Two items from me. One, we have a memo on the rebalancing. The board adopted new asset allocation targets in July, adopted the actual investment resolution in August, and so in the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, we started to make the initial moves there in accordance with the implementation plan that was shared with the board. In rough numbers, it was about $1 billion that moved hands over the past couple of months. Where that came from was there was $330 million of prepayments that came in late July. We traded out of some of the public equities to the tune of about $170 million. So that was across U.S., non-U.S., and emerging markets. So in this context, that was profit-taking. We always like to see profit-taking in that space. And we did wind down the risk parity mandates. The board eliminated those in the asset allocation. We wound those down. So where did the money go? Roughly $400 million went into the liquidity program to top that back up. Risk diversifying got built up a little bit to the tune of about $175 million. And then cash, which you'll recall, we have a temporary larger allocation to cash while we're doing the implementation of some of these new programs. About $385 million went into cash on a temporary basis. The other item is I wanted to let the board know about the SIT client conference. We had a little bit of a snafu with getting the invitations. So the SIT client conference is February 13th through the 16th. We'll have this on the January 15th agenda, but just kind of given the tight turnaround there, we want to make trustees aware of that if that's something of interest. It's at the Ritz-Carlton Laguna Niguel in Dana Point.
Say Feb 13 to 16?
13th to 16th, over the course of the weekend, as usual with them.
Okay, yeah.
Thursday through Sunday.
Spend your Valentine's Day.
So if there's anybody who's interested, kind of let us know, and then we'll have it on the 15th agenda. They are asking for registrations well in advance of January 15th, so we do need a little bit of a head count to at least put the placeholder reservations in.
Got it. So everybody give that some thought and then let Tim know, even though we'll take it up formally in January.
Yes. Yep,
got it. I would think four, yes. That's a Brown Act.
Yep. Do they have an agenda,
I guess? They have a list of speakers, but not the agenda. February 13th through the 16th. So it starts on a Thursday evening. You go all day Friday, all day Saturday, and it wraps up Sunday at noon.
Tim, unless they've changed, my one experience with them was a good part of during both days there was no meeting.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of agenda. So it's not all day. it might be a breakfast meeting, and then the next one might start at 4.
Yeah. The structure is you start the morning at 7 a.m., you go till noon, there's a lunch. Typically, there's golf or other activities in the afternoon, and then you restart for an evening program around 6 p.m., and that goes till 10 or 11 p.m. It's a big block of time with a big chunk of free time in the middle. It's not the way I would structure it, but it's not my meeting.
But interesting speakers.
Yes.
Yeah, the content of the SIT conferences I've always found pretty amazing, the job they do.
All right, so everybody's on notice. If you think you're going to be interested, let Tim know so he can get at least a placeholder headcount in on that, it sounds like. And any other staff reports?
Yes. So strategic planning, the interviews are wrapping up. Following those interviews, Aon will do a workshop with the management team. And then we're looking in February to hopefully have Aon in front of the board to do a workshop with the board, which will include the information from that management workshop along with surveys. We had done surveys of our members and our participating employers and our staff, and they'll have the information at that time to share as well. And then December 20th, next Friday, Cicero will have their annual luncheon. So any board members that are available will have lunch. And then we are going to have our monthly all-staff meeting and then some staff development activities. And in January, we are going to be moving from Sisera.org to Sisera.gov. We had attained the right to Sisera.gov last year. And so in January, we'll start the transition over to that so that people that go to our website or see our email addresses know that we're a government agency. The Sisera.org will still link into Sisera.gov, so if somebody's using the .org, they'll still be able to get to where they need to go to. But we'll just start adding some of that access into the .gov. And then because this is the last meeting of the year, I just wanted to run through a couple little statistics that will take us to around November 30th, because we don't have our December numbers yet. But we did receive 383 service retirement applications for 2024 up to November 30th. The average processing days of those applications was 42.78, and that's from their final active paycheck to their first pension check. So from check to check, it's 42.78. We also enrolled around 1,000 members. So good news is we do have people retiring, but we still have people coming into the plan.
Christina?
Yeah.
On the first check, there's a schedule, right? The first of the month for checks. So if someone gets their first check, that could be an off cycle and then goes into.
Yes, their first check is always an off cycle, so it won't happen on the first. We run different payroll. So our monthly payroll is everybody who's already on payroll, and they're getting their regular monthly payment. Then throughout the month, each week, we run an off cycle. So we're getting those new retirees onto payroll for the first time, as well as processing any deaths. So people that pass away, maybe we have a continuance due beneficiary, they're getting on payroll for the first time. We may have lump sum payouts. So the kind of unusual, not monthly items are happening all the other weeks except for that one when we do monthly. So that's how our processes work.
Also, I have a question. For the new members, do you have a breakdown on how many still kind of replenish classic tiers versus PEPRA? I understand most of them are PEPRA, but there's still people coming from other agencies, right, that go into classic tiers?
Yeah, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. We could run a report, but yes, a lot of those new members coming in, like you said, are PEPRA because they don't have that reciprocity or were a previous member of Sisera, but there still are legacy members that are enrolling with us because of those other situations. But I can get those numbers. And then just overall for the year, we process about $50 million a month in pension payments to 11,000 payees. And of those 11,000, 7,000 are being paid within our local community. So it's Contra Costa County, Solano County, Alameda County. And for those 7,000, that's about $30 million that we put back into the community each month. Just as kind of some numbers that I like to look at each year and make sure that staff know. So I thought it would be a good idea if the board know those numbers too, because we do have a pretty good amount of contribution into the community through what we do. And
I appreciate that information because it helps, on that idea of the impact that we have. So the local reinvestment of funds into the community is critical.
Do those numbers appear typically on the website, members' website? Or could they in some form?
They can. So I first put these numbers together last year, and we included them in the PAFR that was published this year. And the intent is to, going forward, to have them in the PAFR every year. And that's why we've reevaluated them right now, so they're ready for the PAFR for 2024. But we can definitely get them onto maybe like the About Sisera side of the website.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a whole bunch of things on there. I don't recall those numbers being on the About Sisera. It would be interesting to incorporate those, too.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. And we also, in the PAFR, we released our first pension dollar, which gives people an idea of how much contributions the employer pays, the member pays, and then how much come in investments to pay each one of those dollars out of the plan. And so we can also put that in that same area of the website.
I think it'd be a great idea.
So with those 11,000, we pass more retirees than actives in the county.
Oh, yeah.
We're kind of teetering there.
That's
yeah.
I say we're about.
Yeah, so it depends on the month, but yes, we're very much a mature plan now.
Yes. So. We're very mature.
Yes.
And we pay out more than is contributed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you take the prepayments, because we get a large portion of that, if you're looking at how much contributions we're getting in each month, it is less than what we're paying out. If you add in the prepayments that we get that one time a year of the employer contributions, then it gets fairly close to even.
To the point Jerry made, out talking to groups or to any organization, the numbers that resonate with them are the top line number, the size of the plan.
Right.
The monthly nut we have to make for contribution payment or for member retirement payments, and the annual nut, you know, times 12. Those number people are like, what? They are typically very surprised to hear that. They had no idea what the size of the entity was, what its impact is, literally monthly in the community. So it's pretty significant.
Past life, we used to put together, basically it was a fact sheet, just a 20 points that people could have on the tips of their tongue that was always available to them, and they're including the percentage of my percentage paid out, percentage of contributions versus percentage of investments, because I think that's a commonly misunderstood item, because they're almost, I shouldn't say almost always, most people will say that taxpayers are paying the pensions.
Yeah, they don't know.
And it's worth knowing what portion they actually are.
Yeah. Before that's talking anywhere, just look at the PAFR, right? I just take that the night before or whatever just to refresh my recollection on stuff. And it has really a lot of those facts and figures right there.
But a Cliff's Notes kind of a version of would be very handy to have.
Yeah, we'll build a part of our website and put that information in there.
Okay.
I think another item that might be of interest, I mean, to show to public, what is the average pension versus the final salary? Because most people who don't know, they think that pension is basically 100%. So you go to pension and you just receive your pension from the, and that's like public paid basically forever, but which is not true. So that, I think that would be interesting too.
Yeah, we can put that there too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis, there are really two numbers, at least in my view, on average pension. One is the average, and the other is the average of those retiring in the last 1, 2, 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they really are different numbers.
Right.
And, you know, taking in somebody who retired in 1947, that doesn't have much impact in today's world. But anyway.
I think they've hit the actuarial table limit if they retired in 47.
Well, 47 is probably not a good number.
That wasn't your retirement year, was it, Joe?
48.
All right. Any other items, staff reports?
No, that's it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, we stand adjourned for the good of the order.
That's what I think we have wished everyone.
Yes, happy holidays to everyone.
To everyone, and thank you for another great year.
Yes. Well said.
And briefly for a change.
Yes. Good for you.
Do you still have somebody who retired, I don't know, in 40?